ESPN 97.5, KFNC 97.9, HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston, a Gal Media station.
The Killer Bees!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing? It's a Wednesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM. You heard it yesterday. It came to fruition today. The crud has officially taken out Jeremy Branham. His voice is gone. He is not. Don't worry. No RIPs or anything like that. But he's out today. So my man Brian McDonald's going to pull double duty. He's going to do all the hard work behind the glass and also join me for 3 hours of being a pain in the ass as we roll through all things.
That's where you're setting the bar? You're setting the bar at pain in the ass?
Yeah. I mean, so then anything other than that, it just should be labeled a great show in progress.
That's true. Yeah. Set the bar low and then overexceed.
And aim high. Right. So that's where we're going to start. And I guess this goes back to a conversation, BMAC, that we were having yesterday, where you were like, when we were talking about Spencer Arrighetti, and you were like, it's the A's. You're supposed to win this game and do these things.
Yeah, that didn't age well.
Because it's that the didn't age well. A's. And yeah. I warned you guys. I said, well, you know, since the All-Star break, they had the best record in the American League, and I was one game off because I let some time pass. Well, that game is gone now because now we're looking at a team that has been red hot, and all of a sudden the Astros' offense is nowhere. And the Astros drop a game to the A's in extra innings in really rare fashion, the way that it all ended. And here we are. Again, thankfully, the Mariners lost. But this is one that I thought they had so many opportunities to win, left so many runners in scoring position. That was a tough one to swallow last night.
Yeah, so thankfully, because of what you mentioned, the Mariners also losing last night. It seems like the Astros have gotten that favor quite a bit when they've stumbled over the last couple of weeks, because the lead, which I think only got as high as 5.5, is at 4.5. So they really haven't lost much ground. Where I do think it hurts them, though, because I don't think it hurts them at all, really, in the division race with the Mariners.
Right.
Where I think it hurts them is the race to possibly get the second bye with the Guardians, which I now I'm waving the white flag on that. Like, I know it's mathematically possible, kind of. They'd have to go on a hell of a hot streak and have the Guardians go, you know, under 500 over their final 17 games. The Astros have 18 games left. So it's mathematically possible, but I'm waving the white flag and getting ready for a wild card series. I don't see any chance in hell right now that the Astros, even if they play great baseball down the stretch, can pass the Guardians and take the final bye.
See, but here's the thing. The thing that's crazy to me that keeps me holding on before I throw in the towel is the fact that you're altered. It's the good, bad, and the ugly. Whenever you're bad or ugly, the Mariners do you the solid, but then you're watching the Yankees as well as the Guardians. And the Yankees were also within striking distance. The bad is that every time you think you gain ground on Cleveland, the next time Cleveland wins and the Yankees lose, then it's vice versa. So they're both kind of treading water just enough, kind of doing the same thing from the opposite way that the Mariners were doing, that you can't get that full momentum of both teams lose on the same night. You gain ground on both teams because the Yankees, you know, they're in a dogfight with Cleveland as well for the one seed, to where you're at least still, you're not mathematically out of it. As you mentioned, they're close, but it would be nice because if the Astros just played a little bit better baseball over the last couple of weeks, the last 2 weeks, really, I think that this could have been a really, really interesting race down the stretch.
I mean, could have been. I think when you look at the math, though, like as I mentioned, like the Astros would have to play really well to pass them. So I looked it up to see what the Astros would actually have to do. And if you assume the Guardians, who have 17 games left, let's assume they're in the two spot, right? You know, as they're chasing. I know it could flip with the Yankees, but let's put them in the two spot. Mm-hmm. If you take the Guardians over their final 17 games and have them go 8-9, so just one game below 500, I think guessing or hoping for anything less than that or more losses than that would be unreasonable. That's going to put them at 91 wins, meaning the Astros would have to go 14-4 over their final 18 to match them. And right now they hold the tiebreaker, but of course they have another series in Cleveland that would play into that tiebreaking scenario. So just to tie them and hopefully win on a tiebreaker, if the Guardians go 8-9 over the final 17, the Astros would have to go 14-4. Which, I mean, it's possible. It's possible because they've got seven games against the Angels remaining. They've got two more with the Athletics. And you face the Guardians head-to-head. There's a Padres series mixed there in there as well, along with the Mariners series. But 14-4 down the stretch, given that you've just dropped the game to the A's, it feels like a reach to bet on that at this point.
Yeah, it's a long shot, to say the least. Look, I'm hopeful, but at the same time, I'm a realist. I realize that the best-case scenario for this team is to just kind of reset the deck, get ready for the series, make sure you're playing your best baseball, and then go from there. Because I think that as much as we talked about where this team has come from to where they are now, the reality is what happened earlier in the season has set the table for the fact that you can't have these grandiose expectations and think that there's a realistic chance because of the fact that you dug such a hole that you can look back and say, that's exactly why you're not where you want to be. Because without that monstrous just struggle bus, they probably would be sitting in the one seed right now.
Yeah, there's so many things to point back to over the course of the season. I mean, there's the two series against the White Sox where they dropped the first game in each of those series. There's obviously the bloodbath in Kansas City that included the Hunter Brown, 11 hits, 9 runs in one inning. There's a lot of points in the season where we've talked about games they shouldn't have lost, including last night when you and I were talking right before the show started about just the randomness and kind of the unluckiness of losing on like 3 straight bunts. Yep. in 12 innings to the A's. So you flip a few of those, you're now suddenly, because I mean they're 5.5 back of the Guardians. You wouldn't have to flip a whole lot of those should have, could have, won games to be in a spot where you're only a game or two back or maybe even leading over the Guardians. But, at this point, you can't change those, and the math does not look favorable for them to chase down a bye. So it's pretty much get ready for the wild card series, and now we got to, I guess, figure out which of the three possible teams they could face in that wild card series, the Twins, the Royals, or the Tigers. Like, who would we want to see the most?
I think, ideally, though, the Tigers kind
of... They're, I think, 4 back of the final wild card.
Yeah, the Tigers are within striking distance, which is a surprise all in itself. And I know that TK and Blummer were mentioning that last night. Who'd have thought that at this point in the season, AJ Hinch and the Tigers would still have a puncher's chance to try and sneak in. Good on them for having a great season. I don't anticipate that they're going to be a playoff team. The most likely scenario is either the Royals or the Twins. And you handled the Royals at home. They're a different team when they play at home. When they're on the road and they've had some injuries, they lost their first baseman. They had to trade for Yuli. They've lost a couple of players to where you're like, okay, you just swept them here. You got to believe, like, if they came to your building for a 3-game series, you got to feel pretty good about that. It more to me, when I said like setting the deck, to me it more comes down to, we saw Eric Gedde last night. I know that Ben Verlander and Dana Brown on the flagship today was talking about, hey, don't back of the baseball card. He literally said back of the baseball card, and he said,
the back of his baseball card.
Verlander was, hitting 97 on the fastball. It's just a matter of location. He's going to be back. Don't worry about it. Basically telling everybody to basically shut up and listen that Verlander's in the mix. That scares me, but it goes back to the conversation we had initially, which is regardless of what you think and what we all can see is probably the right decision to make, Justin Verlander, from an organizational standpoint, is going to be in the mix for a starting rotation spot.
I think the name on the – we talk about back of the baseball card. I think the name on the back of his jersey is going to be what people in favor of giving Justin Verlander a playoff start are going to point to, because you can't point to anything from his 2 minor league rehab starts or his, 4 starts now back in the major leagues. I mean, he's had 6 starts to get past this quote-unquote, extended spring training that Dana Brown talks about, trying to excuse away the rustiness of missing 2 months for Justin Verlander. 6 starts is enough time to get past that if he still had it. Now, it's great that he has the velocity. People will point to that. And there's some conversations coming out of the Astros camp talking about the shape of his fastball. I don't pretend to understand all the things they're talking about with why a fastball that has the velocity other than not having the location wouldn't be as effective as his other fastball. But regardless of the shape of the fastball, the velocity, the results have been pretty terrible. So, and we could get more into this, as the show goes on. But there's no way I could go into the postseason, and obviously I'm not making this decision, but there's no way I could go in the postseason and try to sell not only the fan base, but the other players in the locker room that Justin Verlander is one of your 3 or 4 best options to put on the mound for a start in the postseason.
Steven, this is what I said when we were kicking this around in the last week or so. The big thing is this is a dress rehearsal right now between now and the end of the regular season. If we all, and I think you and I are both on the same page, and you guys can let us know how you feel, 713-780-3776. Look, we both are basically saying throwing in the white towel on the one or the two seed. You're going to play a wild card series. So you might as well be as prepared as you can be. Well, that means Kyle Tucker, you're going to get at bats every single day, and you got to start snapping out of this, and you got to start getting back to the old Kyle Tucker. And from a pitching perspective, you are on call right now to show us your best stuff in your next, say, three starts the rest of the way. Justin Verlander, Spencer Arrigetti. You guys both have to show you are fully capable and warrant consideration for a playoff start. Because other than that, to me, it's Fromber, it's Hunter Brown, and it's Kikuchi. And other than that, I'm not having a discussion unless down the stretch you show me enough to tell me that I need to kind of reconsider where I'm going, especially in this first series. Obviously, when you get to a longer series, you're going to have to add a starter to the mix. But for now, that's what I think you have to do. You have to make sure that these guys know, hey, it's put up or shut up time. Go do your best stuff and let us see what you got.
There's no reason from performance on the field to have a conversation about anybody other than Fromber, Kikuchi, and Hunter Brown as your three starters in a wild card series. And thankfully, especially if it's the Royals, since they play so poorly on the road, all three of those games, if there is a third game, would be in Houston. So you do have that to your advantage. And if you look at the other possible matchups, you won the series against the Tigers this year 4-2. I think you feel pretty comfortable in that matchup, even though A.J. Hinch would be coming back in, which would actually be kind of cool. And then with the Twins, the Twins do own the season series, but you won that series in the postseason last year, including two games in Minnesota that you took from them. So I feel pretty confident in all those matchups if the starting pitching holds up. And if, and I think this is the big if the starting pitching holds up, if they make the right decisions on who's going to be in the starting staff. I feel confident if the Astros get to a three-game series for the wild card, which we both agree they will because the bye is over at this point, they're going to make the right decision that Fromber and Hunter Brown will be in those first two, or at least right in the three. The question is, will they have the guts to put Kikuchi as one of the three starters in that series over Verlander? I'm not convinced they will.
See, here's the other thing you're leaving out, though, Brian. Look, I obviously think that's the main thing, one of the main things you got to figure out. The other main thing is Kyle Tucker. You've got to figure out what Kyle Tucker is going to be down the stretch, because if you're going to, again, kind of similar to the Verlander conversation, from an organizational standpoint, they are, and from Kyle Tucker's standpoint, he ain't sitting on the bench when they get to the playoffs. He's playing because, again, like you said, it's not even the back of the baseball card as well as it's also the back of the name on the jersey. He's going to get starts. So he's got to contribute, and he's got to get back to somewhat close to where he was. And right now, he's not there. He's 1-4-10. So when you look at that, you say, yeah, you got issues with the pitching staff trying to figure and sort that out. And maybe it's as simple as, but again, it's a bad look. If Verlander is not going to be one of your three starters and you leave him off the roster, that's a big problem, I think, internally with Verlander making a stink. I just don't feel great about it.
It is, but it's not even a guarantee to be on the roster next year. So, I get the idea of you wouldn't want to upset a player who would be here for the long term. But Verlander, because he missed so much time this year, he didn't have his contract vested. He had to hit 140 innings. He didn't get close to that. I mean, it's possible he's back on the roster, but the way he's pitching right now, there's not really a big case for it given his performance and his age. So I wouldn't want to, like, I wouldn't go out of my way to piss off Verlander, obviously. It's not something I'd want to do, but I would make the best decision for the team. I mean,
right, but you got to also consider big picture. If you're anticipating, like we are, that you're going to beat Minnesota, you may need him in the next series. And you don't know what you don't know about Arrigetti or anybody else to say, can Arrigetti, is he going to continue to do this? And he's never pitched in the playoffs before, and he's pitched more innings than he's ever pitched. So you're looking at it going, I still need to make sure Verlander's cool, because that next series, should I get there, especially if you burn your good pitchers in this series to start with, you're going to look to a guy like that because you're going to need more starters.
I would hope Verlander is a mature enough adult to handle this situation. I'm not really worried about his feelings in this. I mean, unless the Astros just handle it in the rudest way possible, then I don't see how, if they come to him and talk to him like adults, say, hey, look, you haven't been in great form. You're still a valuable part of the team. We want you out there when we get to the next round, and we're going to get to the next round. So be ready. Sit this one out. get some rest, get your mechanics right, get in good shape, get some rest, and be ready for the next series. I think if they handle it right, there would be no reason for Verlander to have a pity party and then not be ready to go for the ALDS if the Astros advance. I just can't get to the point where I think Verlander is going to just pout and cry and moan and throw himself out of rhythm for a potential ALDS start. I don't buy that as a possibility.
Yeah, I think that, because when you mentioned that, the other thing that I thought about was, yes, the names on the back of both jerseys matter, and I think that there's going to be push because of that. I think the other thing is the nameplate on the owner's door matters. And I think Jim Crane, again, I hope I'm wrong, because I hope because of everything that we saw that didn't go right with the things that he was trying to do and the punches that he tried to pull when he was with the guys that he had brought in previously and how badly the Montero and the Abreu situation went. I hope they finally, as we talked about yesterday, let Dana Brown do his job. But I just got to believe come playoff time that he is going to be knocking on the doors and picking up the phone and telling some people, that's my guy. We got to make sure we don't piss off JV and possibly we may need him down. I don't know what Crane's going to say, but it scares me because he likes to manipulate things.
It feels like a reach to say Jim Crane's making lineup decisions. I know we have criticized him. A lot of people have criticized him for overreaching what an owner should be involved in. Certainly, he made Dana Brown look like a puppet at times since his tenure started. But calling up and saying JV has to start making the lineup decision for Espada feels like a reach to me. And I mean, I'm not saying it's a 0% that would happen, because you can't dismiss anything crazy with the Astros and the way they've been run over the last couple of years. But I would put the odds being very, very low. I could see him being involved in the conversation. If they're going to tell Verlander you're not starting in the wild card series, I could see Jim Crane, because of his personal relationship with Verlander, being a part of that conversation to make sure Verlander doesn't have hurt feelings. But I can't see Crane going to the point of calling up Espada, calling up Dana Brown, and saying JV has to get one of these three starts.
No, I think that...
Which we won't know. That will never come out. But that's just kind of my gut feeling on it.
We know that in the past he's meddled. That's all I'm saying. He's meddled. We know it from a player acquisition standpoint. We know that he plays it like fantasy baseball. We know he has a relationship with JV. I think that that's why maybe we don't have to have this conversation, because JV just doesn't look good, or it just is the same JV we've seen down the stretch. If JV pitches anywhere near decently, I think that there's going to be a conversation or two had about Justin Verlander that include Jim Crane.
Well, sure, and there's 3 weeks left. I mean, it's today. I mean, as we look at the calendar today, there's about 3 weeks left on the season. So that includes Verlander, that includes Tucker. We have a lot of concerns about them getting back into their top form before the postseason starts, and there's plenty of reason to be concerned about that. Tucker's 1-for-10 with 4 strikeouts. Verlander's ERA is, what, 6 or 7 since he returned? There's a lot of reason to be concerned, but there's also time to where we could be looking back in 2 weeks thinking this conversation turned out to be kind of silly.
Well, hopefully
we will, but we'll see.
Well, to continue to kick it around, we're going to be here all day, so hopefully you guys will be too, 3 to 6. We've got a whole lot to get to in a very, very busy show today. Of course, we're going to be talking Texans. We're going to be talking Astros. We'll talk some SEC football, all with Cole Thompson. Cole Thompson's going to be here. He covers the Texans. He covers the SEC. We'll get into that. Our man Houston Stressens is going to be starting. Garrett from Houston Stressens is going to be joining us as well. Talk a little bit about your Houston Texans from a different perspective as we kind of get a conversation or two going about that. And you're always a part of it as well. You can get Brian McDonald today at Sacked by BMAC on Twitter. You can get me at Pac-Man Joel with a K. You can get us on Twitch, on YouTube. You can also hit us up with text and call 713-780-3776. More to come. Hang with us. Just getting started. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN.
ESPN 97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Hey, one of Branham's groupies grinding on coffee and whiskey just realized no Branham in here today. Branham kind of called his shot yesterday. He was losing his voice during the show. Hopefully he's good to go tomorrow. Needed to kind of rest up the pipes today. So it's just me and BMAC and a cast of thousands and friends that are going to be kicking it until 6 p.m. We were in Astros talk. We'll get to Texans talk and a lot more. But we were talking about the fact that the Astros basically should start being in a standpoint where, as they review where they are and what they're doing, they're probably going to play a wild card series. They're probably going to host a team, either the Royals or the Twins. And how does that translate to what they're going to do with their roster? We know Verlander blew up. Verlander's not been great. He hasn't won a game since he came back off the IL. Dana Brown this morning on the flagship starts talking about, yeah, but he's throwing 97. It's just a matter of where he's throwing it, but we totally believe the back of the baseball card, he's going to be back. Arrighetti also
had, the back of his baseball card,
had the massive puke fest all over himself his last start before last night. Last night, he only gives up two runs. Is that good enough for you? What you saw of Spencer Arrighetti, it wasn't what we saw when he was playing really good teams and mowing guys down, striking out double digits, but was it enough for you to be okay with him being a guy that you can lean on in the playoffs?
I think what he did last night, now, I mean, seven hits is a lot of hits, but no walks, and you get seven Ks through 6 2/3, only give up the two earned runs. I feel good enough with that bounce back that I would put him ahead of Ronel Blanco, which we've seen. I know he had a good bullpen appearance a few days ago, but I put him ahead of Ronel Blanco, what we've seen from him kind of regressing over the second half, in this version of Verlander that we've gotten since his return from the injured list. The four starts have just been absolutely abysmal. So if Verlander continues to pitch like this, I would have Arrighetti as the four starter, meaning he would get a start in the ALDS, which is, I mean, it's risky. He's never had a postseason start, as you've pointed out, as everyone knows, because he's a rookie. But Verlander, he's had a lot of postseason success. We know that it hasn't always translated in the World Series, but this version of Verlander at 41, I don't trust him right now. He has 3 weeks to win that back, and it wouldn't take a whole lot for him to win it back. To me, if he has two really good starts, then I'm back in, and Arrighetti is on the bench or in the bullpen. Because of the back of the baseball card, because of the back of the jersey that says Verlander, if he shows us over two starts that he's going to rebound to form, I would put him back in. But as of this moment, yeah, I think that start against the A's puts Arrighetti back into the fourth spot for me.
I think the reason why, too, Brian, you would be on that kind of a that level, and I'm not far behind you, is the fact that you don't have any other options. I'm bigger on Blanco in a lot of ways than Arrighetti. If Blanco is full health and his arm doesn't look like he's been gassed. They sat him out for a reason. They skipped a start for a reason. They know that his arm has been taxed all year.
Yeah, he's well past his previous career high.
He is Fromber from a year ago, but for different reasons, the second half. Not because of the fact that he didn't have the ability or his feelings were hurt, but he just carried this team for the entire first half when they were trying to figure stuff out, and it took a toll on his arm. And so now they sit him for a start. They sit him out for a start. They say he's going to do some bullpen work. He pitched the other day. But you wonder, how much gas is truly left in the tank for a guy that I have confidence can get out, but now I don't have the confidence that if I go put him back on the mound for a start, can he give me five? Can he do what he was doing and more like he was doing in the first half? Or are we just kind of have to just relent and say, okay, we'll take whatever we can get for him, but we don't know how many innings he can go.
Yeah, I think I would. I hear your comparison to Fromber because he certainly did carry the team in the first half. But I would actually compare Ronel Blanco to J.P. France. But I mean, they're both guys who were not really prospects, older. I mean, France came up at 28, Blanco at 30 when they had their big season. And, I mean, Ronel Blanco's prime was obviously a lot hotter. He had a no-hitter in his first start. It lasted longer because France, I believe, was only 8 starts before he fell off. But I think we're seeing something kind of similar. Guys who weren't big-time prospects, guys who didn't have a very high, innings pitched in his career and now have exceeded that and have just completely gassed out and maybe aren't as talented as the guys around them, being, of course, the reason they didn't come up to their age 28 or 30. So I think I kind of look at Ronel Blanco as J.P. France, but a little bit better. I think he's better than what France was down the stretch last year when he tailed off. I do think he's better than that, but I don't really trust him in a postseason start trying to get five or six innings out of him.
See, and AR Platinum texts in, Blanco's not a lock for a playoff spot. The stats generally equal to or better than Fromber and Hunter. I disagree there. Look, I think Blanco, his first half stats were dominant.
He should have been an all-star, but it hasn't been the same since.
Right, that's what I'm saying. You want to talk about a tale of two different situations, I'll lump Fromber and Hunter together. We know first half Blanco was unbelievable, but we know second half Blanco has been a different story. On the flip side, we know that Fromber and Hunter had their issues in the first half. Fromber and Hunter have essentially been lights out since they got back from the all-star break, And there's no reason to believe that they aren't your 1-2 solidified in as much cement and stone and whatever else you want to put them in. That ain't changing.
No, and look, it's great to point out how great of a first half Renell Blanco had, and it's absolutely true. But to a point when we're talking about success in April and May, I know it's not as back of the baseball card as what we've talked about with other players who were talking about, you know, seasons they had 3 and 4 years ago. But I don't really want to judge Renell Blanco right now on what he did in April and May. It doesn't really factor into me. What I'm trying to factor in and decide is who's in great form now. It doesn't matter to me what you did in April and May if you're in bad form in September going into October. And I'm not saying Renell Blanco is completely unable or incapable of giving you a good playoff start. I think there's something in there. I just don't think he's one of your best four options right now. And I would put Arrigetti ahead of him.
I think the key, too, Brian, is the fact that right now you only need three. You only need three options for the first series, if indeed they're going to
play. Yeah, there's no way Blanco's in the top three. And I wouldn't even put him in the top four, although I would hear the conversation, but I would lean Arrigetti. Because when you look at second half, Arrigetti's been much better second half than Renell Blanco has.
But I also think that from a standpoint, you only need three. And honestly, as much as I put the first two in stone, right now, unless things change drastically, I've got all three of them in stone. I've got Kikuchi set in stone as well. Those are my three guys. Those are the three guys that are going to take the bump for me if I need to play three games, and I'll sort it out from there. I've got two quality options, maybe three, that I can go to with Arrigetti, with Blanco, and with a potential for Verlander to get better if I then have to reset when we go to the next round. But we've got to get there first, and those are my three starters. All right, you guys want to chime in on this? L.A., you want to talk a little bit about Justin Verlander? What's going on?
Yeah. So two points I want to make very quickly. The first point is you don't keep a future Hall of Famer out of the pitching rotation in the playoffs. That's just something you don't do.
What if he's pitching like dog's not?
Is,
wait, L.A., before pardon? We get to the second point. I understand you know the back of his baseball card, but if he did what he did the other night and gave up a grand slam and a three-run bomb in the first two and a half, three innings, how are you going to tell me that warrants giving him the baseball?
Yeah, so that brings me to my second point, and that is it's going to be up to the pitching coach and a manager to micromanage his innings, pitches, and the minute Verlander is in trouble, I don't care if it's with two outs in the first inning or whatever, that's when you got to take the man out.
But, L.A., you're talking about that. I hear what you're saying, right? But at the same time, he didn't pitch that many pitches the other night. You say, are you going to pull him in the first inning? Because the start before in Cincinnati, he loaded the bases. He walked the bases loaded in the first inning. You going to pull him in the first inning? In the Arizona start, he gave up two. He had two outs. He gave up two singles and a bomb, and suddenly you're down 3-0 in the first inning.
Well, and Verlander, I think, is a smart enough guy, and a manager, and the pitching coach, they're smart enough to know that the Astros this year have had trouble putting runs together in many games, games that they should have won. They couldn't put good hits together to win games. So that's probably going to continue in the playoffs.
So that's another reason why I'm L.A., and I hear what you're saying. Thanks for the call. We got to get to it, and we got to get another call in here. But the thing is, with what you just said about the fact that you don't have as much wiggle room because you're worried about the offense, that's why I can't take my chances holding my breath that Justin Verlander is going to keep his head above water and do what he needs to do, especially if I'm worried about runs and run support.
Yeah, I hear what he's saying, and it's not a completely unfair point. But I hate the idea of, well, he has to get a start because he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Well, he's a Hall of Famer based on things he did in 2008, 2010, 2011. What does that matter in 2024? I mean, what matters is his current form, and his current form has not been a top four pitcher on this team.
What if your Hall of Famer is pitching like a Triple-A starting pitcher that's struggling to make it to the big leagues and can't find the strike zone in the right spots? That's a bigger problem no matter what his back of his baseball
card. It's not what's best for the team.
Right. Chris, we got to get you in here before we keep moving on. What do you got for us?
Yeah, no, Justin's definitely pitching like a Triple-A pitcher right now since he's come back off the IL. Glavin, I saw an interview with him, and he was saying that what really turned his career around was when he decided not to throw 100%, but started throwing 96% so he could know where the ball was going, be more accurate. Just because Justin's throwing hard doesn't mean he knows where the ball is going. So I think that's the reason why he's throwing hard, is because he doesn't know where the ball is going. I mean, JV is not going to willingly not be the third starter. You can't even take him out of a baseball game, Brian. I mean, he won't let a spotter even take him out. And my other point is, I think Arrigetti should be the game three starter, because Kikuchi's had experience coming out of the bullpen and playoff games before. Good show, guys.
Appreciate it, Chris. Thanks for the call. Look, I would push back on that by saying,
I mean, he's had one appearance in the bullpen. Yeah. I would hardly call it like bullpen experience in the postseason.
My bigger thing is Kikuchi's got multiple years of major league experience and one playoff game. Arrigetti has zero playoff experience, and he's basically thrown more innings than he's ever thrown in his life. Those have a couple of red flags attached to them where I'm going to really question where and how I use Spencer Arrigetti. That's just me.
Yeah, I mean, the difference in the postseason bullpen experience between Kikuchi and Arrigetti is one appearance.
Yeah.
I know Kikuchi is the veteran, but the difference in their bullpen experience in the postseason is nothing to make a decision over.
No, but the main thing is, you're right. From playoff experience, I have no ground to stand on with that, other than my mourn is just major league experience.
No, I wasn't disagreeing. Yeah. I agree Kikuchi should be the third. I'm making a point to the caller's point that we should give Kikuchi or put Kikuchi in the bullpen because he has this postseason bullpen experience, but it's only one more appearance than Spencer Arrigetti has in the postseason. So I don't see that being a tiebreaker or deciding factor in why you would go with one or the other. I would take Kikuchi. I trust him more. That's just kind of a gut feel, but if they made it Arrigetti, I wouldn't stress out over it, but I would prefer it to be Kikuchi.
Well, and I would say this to Chris's point where he was really right, which is on the Verlander point. When Kikuchi, and a lot of his career has been based on this, where he's trying to get his velocity up, and his velocity's good, but when he misses over the heart of the plate with that fastball, and he gets crushed. So that's where you do have to be smarter and realize, since he's been with the Astros and they've basically used his secondary pitches a lot more, he's been a ton more effective and he's not getting crushed. And that's something that we'll keep an eye on as well. All right, we'll get to some more Astros talk in a minute. But before, as we continue to move on, let's get to some Texans talk. Look, week one, we know what the Texans did. Some people thought that there was a great performance and they looked dominant. Other people like Paul thought, hey, if you played several other teams, you might not have won. But we saw what happened around the rest of the league. We've got our power rankings. Let's talk about yours. Who was better than the Texans in week one? If you want to chime in, 713-780-3776, or hit us up on social media, text message, you know the deal. All right, before we roll on, though, I do want to tell you and take a quick break here and tell you a little bit about Allstate Siding and Windows. Look, I believe in Allstate Siding and Windows. They are awesome. And the reason why I say that is I speak from personal experience. They came to my house when my wife and I bought our new house, and we were talking about doing something with the windows. They looked at our windows. They gave us all the different products that they offer. They gave us the best possible fits, literally, for our windows, and we were so glad that we went to Allstate Siding and Windows, because it starts with the curb appeal. It upgraded the entire look and feel of the house. It modernized the house more. It looks like it's almost a brand new house. It was phenomenal. But the main thing that you're going to love is you're going to reduce your energy bills up to 35 to 40%. Phenomenal in the fact that they are energy efficient windows. They're also hurricane resistant. They're also great about keeping all of the elements out and all of the air conditioning or heating in. And the best part about all of this is Allstate Windows and Siding has been in the job and been in the city and been doing this the right way for almost 50 years. Mary and her brother and the entire family, they do it themselves. Mary manages everything back at the headquarters. Her brother gets out there. He came to my house. He told me exactly what we needed to do, the products we should consider, and how it would best fit. We went with his suggestions. We couldn't be happier. Right now, they got 30% off on all windows. They also have $2,500 off a complete siding job if that's something you're interested in. Check them out today. Give them a call. Get a free estimate where all you got to do is call them. They'll come to you, and they'll tell you exactly what they could do. 832-204-1936. That's 832-204-1936 or allstatesidingandwindows.com.
ESPN 97.5.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
No Branham today. B-Mac and Blank, as we take you until 6 o'clock, as you still got bees in the hive, and it is alive. We had Astros talk going on. And a lot of people chiming in on this topic because of the fact that Justin Verlander creates so many memories and so many reactions because of what he's been for the Houston Astros. But I think to Brian and I's point, you can't worry about what he's been even since he's just been an Astro. You have to worry about what he's going to be going forward. And the biggest thing with that is you just don't know. And what you've seen recently gives you more reason to be concerned than calm as you try to set up your rotation.
Yeah, 2017, 2019, 2022 memories don't win 2024 playoff games.
Exactly.
And that feels like a heartless thing to say, but it's just the reality. I mean, Verlander is, as Jeremy would say, is the greatest Astros starting pitcher in the team's history. I mean, the only other guy that would be in the conversation would probably be Roy Oswalt. So I mean, even if you have him two, he's still one of the top two in the history's franchise, in the history of the franchise, easy for me to say. But that's something, while we should obviously always keep those memories close to our heart and celebrate them and love them, that doesn't really matter for the form that he's in currently. And the form he's in currently is not worth a playoff start.
Exactly.
He has time to fix that, but right now he's not in that form.
I want to get Jason in here before we switch topics to the Texans. Jason wants to get in here on Verlander. What's up, Jason?
Yeah, so my question is it out of the realm of possibility for Verlander to be willing to come out of the bullpen? I know he's made one bullpen appearance a couple years ago in the World Series when it was all hands-on-deck type of deal, but can Espada go to him and say, look, you're not making this roster as a starter. You can make the roster and pitch out of the bullpen. Do you guys think he'd be willing to do that?
So that's the key thing. Would he be willing to do that? Because if you listen to the game on Sunday Night Baseball and Ravitch and the guys in the booth, we're talking about the fact that he's never done it before. You're right. I remember it. He did it in the Red Sox series too in the playoffs. But it's something that's a possibility, but they alluded to the fact that they didn't think he was willing to do it and he wasn't going to do it. So therefore, he's either going to start or he's not going to be on the playoff roster, which got everybody's wheels turning. We had already talked about it prior to that. I think that's the big key. We know that in the past that Odorizzi was a guy that said, I don't like this. Even when he did it, he had all kinds of hangups and, you know, prep and how to get ready. And it was just a big pain in the ass. I think with Verlander, the other part of this is the conversation's tough. I don't think Espada in a first-year managerial role, that's a tough thing to do. We've seen how volatile JV gets, even getting taken out of games. We've seen how you got to kind of handle him with kid gloves like a lot of veteran starting pitchers. I think that's a tough conversation because I don't think Justin Verlander's going to be on board with that.
No, I don't either. And even if he was willing to have the conversation, as you mentioned, he did it in the Red Sox series in 2017. The caller mentioned he did it in the World Series. I forget the specifics of that scenario. But even if he was willing to do it, I think you're talking about a guy who would have to come in at a clean inning, right? He's not coming in with runners on, having to get ready in a hurry. This is going to have to be a situation where, like, you tell him, okay, definitely game three. There's no mystery about what game it is. It'll be game three. You're coming in after, as soon as Kikuchi's done, let's say he goes five, you're coming in for the sixth inning and you're giving us two innings to bridge the gap to the high leverage guys in the back of the bullpen. That's the only way that would work. But then what if Kikuchi's dealing? Are you just going to automatically take him out to put in a guy like Justin Verlander who struggled? And even if you are willing to take Kikuchi out, I mean, let's say you're in the sixth, seventh inning. Are you going to put in Verlander who's struggling over guys who have been in those situations? The Brian Abreus, the Ryan Presleys, the Taylor Scotts, the Josh Hader would be the ninth inning, so Verlander wouldn't be in for him.
Even Neris.
But yeah, well, I mean, yeah, I don't know. Neris was – I don't know about Neris. Maybe I would take out I don't know if I'd have a problem with putting in Verlander instead of Neris. But you hear what I'm saying, though. Like, are you going to take out Kikuchi early? Are you going to – put in Verlander who's not in good form because you, instead of these guys who are experienced in those spots, have been in those spots, you know, millions of times, know how to handle the quick up and down. I just don't think there's a logical place to put Verlander, even if he's willing to come out of the bullpen.
Hear me out, though, Brian, on this one, because of the fact that we heard Dana talk today and we mentioned the quote about the fact that he was topping out at 97 miles an hour. We know he's still got it back of the baseball card. He's going to figure it out. I'll tell you this right now. I think where he was thinking about is exactly what you're talking about.
A piggyback?
A piggyback, or what do you normally want to get from an Ort or guys out of the bullpen that's going to try and give you one or two solid innings? You want some guy throwing hard that is going to blow you away and empty the tank for one or two innings. If that's what you're worried about, if you're focused on his velo is the same, then that's what you're talking about, because we know that the problem has been overall location and as he gets longer into a ball game. If you're going to tell me for an inning or two, he's going to empty the tank on his fastball. His curveball was actually pretty good the other night. They were even talking about it on the telecast that he should have thrown it more. That if he's willing to do it, you're right. Now I'm talking about a guy that I have confidence for an inning or two that's going to top out at 97 miles an hour, that if he throws his curveball anywhere near effectively and keeps guys off balance, for less than one time through a batting order to get six outs or three outs, I believe in that guy. I just don't believe he wants to do that.
I question if we even really believe in that, though, because, yeah, he can hit 97, but he doesn't know where it's going right
now.
That's
the big thing,
too. I mean, in this scenario you painted, he's coming in, he's emptying the tank, he's basically almost, not. I hate to say, like, throwing mechanics out the door, but he's trying to throw as hard as he can. For a guy who's already struggling with command, the command probably being his biggest issue right now, I don't think that best suits Justin Verlander to have good results if he's coming in and just trying to hump it up and throw 97 for two innings.
Yeah,
beside the whole point of him not being used to the role and all the other possible problems that go along with that, I don't think with his command controls, now hopefully he can fix that over the next 3 weeks, but if he's still having these command controls, I don't think him coming in and trying to throw gas for two innings necessarily leads to the results that we would want from that spot.
See, you're right. I'm not saying just throw gas. And to your first point, which is the most valid of all, which is we saw, and I mentioned it and I alluded to it with the caller, if he's going to walk the bases loaded in the first inning.
Yeah, like he did in Cincinnati.
Yeah. Or in the case of his last start, it wasn't that the fastball wasn't good. It's the location was awful with the fastball. The curveball, actually, the location was good. He wasn't throwing it. He wanted to throw the fastball. So you're right. That's the bigger issue, and that's why it kind of comes full circle to the way we opened the program, where I said, look, this is going to be a dress rehearsal for Arrigetti and Verlander for the last three starts. Arrigetti started off pretty damn good last night to at least say, okay, we see that he can get back on track. He was more like the old Arrigetti last night. Let's see what Verlander gives you, especially in the next two starts, and we'll have to gauge accordingly. Like, is he capable of kind of dialing it back in? That's going to be the big question.
Yeah, because when does he start next? It'd be against either the A's or the Angels, right? So, it's not tonight. I'm trying to see when he starts. It's not Thursday, so we're talking about the weekend. He's going to be facing the Angels in L.A., Look, I mean, I know he's just – well, I said this. I'm not going to put you on this because you were right on it. I know I just said it was the – oh, it's only the A's last night, and I'm about to say, well, it's only the Angels. But I can't take Verlander seriously as far as him turning a corner and being the guy that we need him to be in the postseason if he can't go out to L.A. and dominate the Angels.
Right. No, and I agree with that. So, all right, we're going to continue to roll. We'll get back to some more Astros talk, but that was some good conversation to start the program. We've got a lot coming up with the Texans, so we got to get into some NFL. Let's get into the fact that question that I set up last segment. I mean, where are you with your Houston Texans after week one of the regular season? Where would you put them? Who's better than the Houston Texans after week one? Let us know. 713-780-3776. Call, text, hit us up on social media. Before we go to the break, I do want to tell you a few things about MyBookie. We know MyBookie is the place that I always tell you to go to because they are the best place to go when you want to put a wager down on whatever game you're watching. And we know that football's back, so that means the wager time is the right time when we're talking about the greatest time of the year. You've got baseball playoffs around the corner. You've got college and pro football. You've got so many sports you can bet on, and one place I tell you to go, it's MyBookie.ag because they take care of you in a variety of ways. They always got promotions going on. Right now, they got a weekly risk-free boost on Thursdays. You can bet without a sweat. If your bet hits, you win big. If it doesn't, forget it. On Thursdays with MyBookie, they'll refund your wager. That's big. MyBookie also giving away hundreds of thousands in prizes with their Super Survivor and Squares contest. Join now. Get a shot at huge cash rewards. Start going to MyBookie.ag on a regular basis. Whenever they ask for a promo code, use ours. Bet975. You can claim some extra bank on your first deposit. MyBookie bonus options make it easy to deposit with crypto or credit, but when you use that Bet975 code, you can get more cash in your account immediately, depending on what you put in when you first sign up. And the bigger the deposit, the bigger your bonus. They are fantastic. They even got live dealers standing by if you want to just play some casino games. You don't want to fly to Vegas. You don't want to drive to Louisiana. You want to sit in your pajamas or boxers and just see if you can get some casino games going. Live dealers with the blackjack, with the poker, and so much more. Go to MyBookie.ag right now. Sign up, and on that first deposit, you'll receive that bonus using our promo code BET975. Do what I always tell you to do. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with the only place I tell you to do it. It's MyBookie.ag.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by. Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
Back on the Bees. Jeremy Branham with a day off today, resting his pipes as he had a little bit of a lost voice situation happening yesterday. Hopefully he gets well real soon. We'll hopefully have him back.
He just didn't want it bad enough today.
I guess not. I mean, sometimes you just got to be a gamer and not be soft. And this is one of those moments where maybe you got to put your big boy pants on and just.
What would Udoka say about Jeremy today?
He would not be happy. He would have some cuss words interlaid with some pretty choice words. By the way, I do want to remind everybody that we do have our listener party coming up again this year. It's going to be next Friday. It's going to be a phenomenal evening. It's for adults only, if you know what I mean, because we're going to have alcoholic beverages. But it is going to be fun right here at the home of Gal Media, where you guys can get a tour of the production facility, the studios, see everything that we do sometimes while we're doing it, and then hang out with all of us with some great food as Philly Flats. We're going to have BB's Tex Orleans, J-Bar M, Lane's Chicken Fingers, Halal Guys, Space City Vodka, Tejas Beer, all getting you ready for a full night of food, drink, and fun. And we always have a chance for you to win a special prize in the raffle from Republic Boot Company as well. We got a limited amount of guaranteed admission tickets that are still available for purchase. That includes your food and the drink. You do have to be 21 to attend. Get to ESPN975.com right now under the promotion tab to get your tickets before it's too late. All right, so with that being said, Brian, I saw this the other day, and I was curious. When you're talking about, you know, I mentioned Paul just not being on the Texans bandwagon, that they beat the Colts, but he thought if they played another opponent, they might not have been so quote-unquote lucky, that he wasn't sure they played their best game. You know, we watched every game across the league. We saw the upsets. We know Cincinnati didn't look good. We know that teams that kind of were starting to get penciled in as potential contenders might look a little bit like pretenders after 1 week of the season. So if from your perspective, if you would say the Texans are better than, who's still better than the Texans? So we know that the Texans got the W, I don't know, depending on how you feel, but how many teams could you see where you could say they're better than, or I'd put the Texans above, them above the Texans right now?
It's a short list for me, to be honest. I hear what Paul's saying, because obviously there was deep shots that Anthony Richardson missed. We know the one where Kamari Lassiter got beat on a double move by Adonai Mitchell, hook him. It should have been a touchdown if that was an accurate quarterback. There was another one where Stingley thought he had deep coverage. He was sitting in zone, and Adonai Mitchell was wide open in the end zone, and Richardson missed him there as well. So you could certainly make the case for, quote-unquote, they got lucky. I don't really share that, because I mean, the Texans, I think, would have game-planned differently if they were facing a quarterback who could hit the broadside of a barn like Richardson sometimes cannot do. But I kind of push back on the lucky thing. And right now, I thought the Texans, especially in offense, looked great. There's definitely some things to clean up. The offensive line protection, being able to handle stunts and twists inside, was a problem. But right now, I'd only put three teams ahead of the Houston Texans in my power rankings after week one. And I don't think there's really any surprises here, even though one of these teams lost their first game. But my power ranking top three would be Chiefs 1, 49ers 2, Ravens 3, because, I mean, their only loss was the number one team. And then I would have the Texans at number 4 with the Eagles right behind them in 5th.
So we have all the same teams. And where I'm at is kind of what you just said. I was going to put them 3rd. However, I can't until you prove you can beat your daddy.
Yeah, because the Ravens
beat you twice last year.
Well, not only did they beat you twice, you didn't score an offensive touchdown against them.
And the fact that they're still a hyper-talented team. It's week one, and they're still figuring out how to use, and that's a big story in Baltimore, how to use Derrick Henry and what they're going to do going forward. But you know the talent is there. You know that Zay Flowers looks like he is creating space against anybody that tries to stop him. You know Lamar's still going to be Lamar. They've got two tight ends to choose from. We talked about those guys yesterday. So for me, it's exactly where you're at. The bigger question to me was, I was considering, because the Eagles got a win against a quality football team, according to some, in out of the country.
Not against a quality quarterback, right, Joel?
Evidently not. And he's soft. He can't stay healthy. And so when you look at all those factors, they got a win, but their defense didn't look very good. Green Bay was moving the football. Green Bay had opportunities that they left points on the table they should have gotten that might have changed the outcome of that football game. So that's why I put the Eagles also at 5th, slightly behind the Texans. I do as well have the Chiefs. Then I have the Ravens. The Chiefs, the 49ers, the Ravens, and then the Texans and the Eagles. The big caveat, 49ers looked so damn good, and that was without CMC.
that, and really without Ayuk, he didn't do much.
Right, and he was dropping footballs. That you look at it and say, yeah, they can get better, but they look dominant. The Chiefs looked like they were the better team all night long. Were they as dominant as the Niners? Because I think that's a discussion.
Yeah, I could see that argument, but I can't ignore the head-to-head results, and not to go back to the baseball card, but if I'm power ranking how good I think these teams are, I can't ignore that even though the 49ers maybe looked more dominant in their matchup, I would definitely say the Chiefs were facing a better team, facing the Ravens, than the 49ers facing the Jets. So you have to give the Chiefs a little bit of a tiebreaker there. And when these two teams last met, I know it went to overtime, but I thought the Chiefs were the better team, and they have been for several years. So until the 49ers prove it, I would still have the Chiefs ahead of them. And I kind of feel the same way about the Eagles, dropping them to fifth below the Texans, because I can't forget 10-1 start, then 1-5 down the stretch. I know it was a great win in Brazil against the Packers, but let's see it for a few more weeks, because this was a front-running team last year that started off great and then completely fell apart, had to replace both of their coordinators. So I'm going to need to see it for at least a couple more weeks before I'm willing to move the Eagles up, unless one of the teams above them slips.
See, that's where I'm at with Kansas City. When it came down to it, as much as I was really thoroughly impressed with the way that the Niners had their way with the Jets, the big thing is if I'm going to say from a Ravens perspective that you have to beat your daddy and the Ravens beat you the last two times that y'all played, then from the same perspective, if I'm going to go head-to-head, the last time they played, the Chiefs beat the Niners, so therefore the Chiefs still sit at number one. They hold the highest peak on the mountaintop until they get knocked off. And right now, the only chance of getting them knocked off by the Niners is going to be in the Super Bowl. So kind of what you were saying about the Eagles. If the Chiefs continue to roll, fine. If they struggle and the Niners are dominant or vice versa, then it'll be a clear cut for the regular season. But for me, if I'm talking about the Niners and the Chiefs, until the Niners prove they can beat the Chiefs, then I will put the two-time Super Bowl champions and all their accomplishments and the back of their football card above the Niners.
Yeah, it would take, you know, injury. Like, I mean, if Mahomes went down, Kelsey went down, Chris Jones went down, something like that, then sure, you're willing to look at the and adjust. Or if they just stop winning for some reason, why in the world would that happen?
Huh? Sometimes it's complacency. Sometimes when a team's won two Super Bowls in the middle of the season, they kind of relax, they think they're going to win their division, and maybe they have a little lull where you go,
I don't even know if I would move him down. It's going to take a lot for me to move the Chiefs below the one spot.
Last year they had a lull, and people were questioning if they were going to make the playoffs and what they were going to be.
I think they won 11 regular season games. I mean, I know they weren't the number one seed. They had to go on the road to Buffalo. They had to go on the road to Baltimore. But until, like you said, I mean, I can't believe I get a chance to quote Ric Flair here, but I'm going to take the chance. To be the man, you've got to beat the man. Right. And, brother, right now the Chiefs are the man. And yeah, so until they're beaten, I'm not moving them.
But that's the reminder I was saying. They had a lull in the middle of the regular season last year. We were wondering what Kelsey was. They were losing some games they should have won. They lost to a dominant Packers team, of course. That was going to happen. But down the stretch, they started to flip the switch. And once they flipped the switch, whether they had home field advantage or not, they proved they're still the Chiefs. And so that's what you say. During the regular season, the only way I think in the power rankings they would slip off the one spot would be if they swooned for a couple weeks. Or if they sustained.
I don't even know if a 2-3 game lull moves them for me. To me, it's injury. That's the only way I move them off.
So there you go. All right, we're going to get into some more football next because we got an expert in the station. He's going to join us in the studio. He's going to talk everything about your Houston Texans. He's Cole Thompson. We can't wait to get him in here. He's a friend of the show. He's been here for a while. We're going to get him in here, and you guys can be a part of the show. All that in hour number two of the Killer Bees. Stay tuned. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
ESPN 97.5.